The commotion in the courtyard below reaches low when she steps into the St. Clair dormitory. There is only Mireille, lying in the long room of tightly made beds, when Laure enters with Madeleine. The two girls have been given special permission by the dormitory governess to sit with their sick friend for a few minutes before returning to their needlework lessons. Laure doesn't really believe that Mireille is ill and refuses to show her any sympathy. She knows that Mireille is just trying to get out of her last month in the workshop. Mireille found out last week that she was going to marry an officer stationed in Canada. He is a young and handsome man, and wealthy enough that Mireille will not ever have to return to the Salpêtrière. While Laure has been struggling to learn new Point de France stitches, Mireille has been feigning sickness, the distant soldier's locket tucked under her pillow. Still, Laure is happy to have an excuse to come up to the empty dormitory. With no officers around, she can talk freely without being hushed or told to start reciting the Paternoster. Madeleine rushes past the window toward Mireille's bed at the end of the room. She has brought with her, in the pocket of her dress, an ounce of salted butter that she saved from lunch. She takes out the melting pad and brings it to Mireille's lips. "Why are you feeding her your lunch? She already gets wine and meat with her pension." Laure can't stand to look at Madeleine fussing over Mireille as if she were a blind kitten in need of milk. How can she be the one getting attention when she already has more than the others? Laure walks to the window and looks down at the dozens of people gathered in the courtyard of the Maison de la Force. They have come today to watch the city's prostitutes being transferred to the Salpêtrière. The girls of the St. Clair dormitory are forbidden to observe these women. Even mentioning them is punishable. The administrators say that observing the prostitutes will taint the morals of the Bijou. They fear that the years of shaping these carefully selected orphans will be lost by one glance at the ill-reputed women. The superior herself has told them that their melodic voices singing Ave Maris Stella and Veni Creator will be spoiled, and that the stitches the Bijou's fingers have been trained to produce in imitation of Venetian lace will unravel in the coarse company of the Fille de Mauvaise Vie. Laure knows she wouldn't be a resident of the St. Clair dormitory at all if it hadn't been for the years she spent being refined in the house of Madame d'Aulnay. Seeing the prostitutes gathered by the archers and the crowd that has come to jeer at them reminds Laure that even the Bijou dormitory of the Salpêtrière, where girls are taught skills, is still a division of the most miserable institution of the kingdom. To those who are not imprisoned within its walls, the Salpêtrière is nothing but a place to lock away the most wretched women of France.
Madeleine, half of Paris is in the courtyard. We can finally watch the prostitutes being brought in.
Madeleine's gentle voice pauses in her recitation of the Pater. Laure waits, but after a moment the girl restarts the prayer from the beginning. Whereas Laure is considered a bijou because of the swiftness of her fingers and the sharpness of her wit, Madeleine is among the favorites of the hospital because she is gentle and kind. The officers must watch over Laure, but they say that Madeleine sets an example for all the lost souls and fallen women of the hospital. Although the tiny girl is but a sheep herself, the officers try to make her a shepherd. They ask Madeleine to read from the giant prayer books at the front of the dormitory. Her voice emerges as the weak murmuring of a distant angel, and the girls hold their breath so they can hear it better. Laure has known Madeleine, her only friend among the girls of Sainte-Claire, since the day she returned to the Salpêtrière at 14 years old, following her stay with Madame d'Aulnay.